Kino zu Hause, der DocFest München Podcast. Filmgespräche des Internationalen Dokumentarfilmfestivals München.
Please welcome with an even warmer applause the director of Hollywood Gate, Mr. Ibrahim Nashat. It's so great that you're here despite the operation you had most recently. So thank you for coming to Munich for the German premiere of Hollywood Gate. Of course, the film has been screened internationally. The world premiere was at Venice last year, and then it was also screened at ITFA in Amsterdam and at Zurich Festival and many, many other festivals. And we are so, so happy to have the German premiere of Hollywood Gate here at the DocFest in Munich. The obvious question is, how at all did you get access to this group of Taliban? What was the story that you told them? What was the deal that you did with this kind of devilish people to be able to shoot them and to live through all these permanent dangers of we will kill him and he will die soon and all the things that get mentioned in the film? How did you manage?
Thank you so much, first of all, for having me and for coming and doing the Q&A with me. And thank you all for coming for the film, staying for the Q&A. And it really means a lot to finally have our German premiere, considering that I live now in Berlin for over 6 years. Half of my family is German, hopefully in the future. And it really means a lot to finally have our German premiere. It's like premiere at home, because especially the movie is already a German production. It's not a foreign production to here. So I'm very happy to be here. And yeah, it's good. It's not so bad. And regarding the access, so I spent over 10 years working on journalism, filming with a lot of world leaders, and that has allowed me somehow to get to understand the way of approaching people in power, which is always through a middleman. And when the Taliban took over the power, we started to try to approach the middleman that was bringing them to the TV channel. So we see a Taliban is coming on BBC, who's bringing it to the BBC. You call the BBC, and it's like, it's this guy, it's this guy, it's this guy. So you contacted the same guy, got an access. He said, come to Afghanistan. They would like you to film them, considering your big CV, work filming with world leaders and all of this. And then when I got there, the middleman disappeared, and I was all by myself in there. But during the time that I was with the middleman, I asked him to put me in contact with a translator from the group. Mm-hmm. So I found myself with a Talibani in Afghanistan with nothing to film, trying to knock every door. Nobody was accepting us. And then I almost ran out of money. So I asked, I told the translator, hey, I have nothing else here to do. I don't think my story is going to work. I'm going to leave. And he said, but why would you leave without filming anything? Maybe you could just film a small story. Film with some of the small guys. And I said, which kind of guys? He said, my cousin has been relocated to the airport. So maybe you can go and film something small about him. And that's how the story started. He took me to the airport and I saw Hollywood Gate. And I was like, I have to find a way to stay within this space. I met Mukhtar first. And Mukhtar is the lieutenant, the younger guy. And he said, yeah, I would love that you film with me. He's full of himself, happy, coming out of war. You're very euphoric. And I said, okay, let's film. And he said, but you have to get the permission of my leader. And a leader gets to a leader gets to the leader until I met with Maulai Mansour, who was at the beginning also very happy to film. The thing is, it was not as hard to get the access, but the hardest part was keeping the access. Because by the time Taliban started to show their true colors, they started to change. And then the story started to get harder. But from the first day, I told them I want to stay for 1 year. So whenever they make things hard for me, I say, okay, there's no story. All of this filming that I've done is for nothing. So we have to find a way. And I keep insisting and going into different doors. And it became much harder that every day there is a new leader. But yeah, with keeping the same story, I think that I'm here for 1 year to show the world what I see. And never changing the way I'm talking is what kept the access going.
Okay. You mentioned the use of a translator, who you told us just now was part of the Taliban group. How did the filming work linguistically? Because do you have any knowledge of Pashto or Dari, or did they try to communicate with you in Arabic, or English, or did you just see with the help of the translator afterwards what you filmed and what the people were saying?
I had with me the translator in the beginning from the Taliban, and later by the time I changed him with another translator who now lives in Berlin, we had to bring him out to be able to release the film, and now he lives in Berlin. And he would be with me as a live interpreter every day, so I had him in my ear translating, but we had a deal that he should never translate anything bad they say about me. So I don't freak out, because like, I'm going to kill you. And then you know at this moment, this guy's telling you, I'm going to kill you. And he hid it so well that he would always try to make different translations. Like, but his look was not saying that. And he's like, no, he's saying that, but he's weird. And then later in the edit, we discover those things.
We also see that there's a lot of mistrust by the leaders against you as the filmmaker, that you get prohibited from filming sometimes. Did the Taliban ask you to see the film, what you filmed that day, or was there some control mechanism, or did they trust you, or how did they control you?
Well, trust is a big word. I don't think they ever trusted me. And I think it's clear in the film that they don't trust me. But for them, controlling is me controlling the means that you've been given. So if I give you an access to film within this little space, you're not going to have an outcome that is accepted the propaganda that we're aiming for. And I was haunted by the futility of the material that we filmed for the whole phase of filming. And also during the edit, I was really emotionally in a very bad place, feeling that it's not going to work. But we always knew that if it doesn't work, we're not obligated to get the film out. The film is only going to go out if we know that we're able to transfer the suffering of the Afghans. And I hope that this is what you guys saw in the film, that you felt the suffering of the Afghans, even without having to see the violence that they face every day. Especially the women, of course. And they can't even go to the park. I don't know what to say.
There are some scenes where we see the women being like beggars on the street, lying in the middle of the street, sitting in front of entrances and stuff like that. Did they understand that you are also filming those kind of street scenes, or also the scenes with the little girls dancing around you?
The scenes with the little girls dancing around me, because I was left in the village. The other scene when it was snowing, actually, this was the only time that they said to me, oh, you can go out, because I said, oh, it's snowing, it's beautiful, I want to film the snow. So this was the only time that I went out, but I was sitting on the car with them. So most of that was filmed when I'm in the back of the car, but no one was really looking what I'm filming. But in general, the word of the Taliban, women are only allowed to be out freely in the world without people bothering them, only when they reach the stage that they are beggars. That's the only job that the Taliban are allowing freely for women. All the other jobs are, women are even either banned or forbidden or being faced with a lot of pressure. Yeah, you will come to work, marry my guys, or whatever restrictions they put against them. And this is a movie about the world of the Taliban. So the only presence of women is the way we saw it. And the absence of women in this film is actually their presence, because this is where they are in the society, hidden in houses, forced not to do their jobs as doctors, and letting men who don't understand how to save medicine lead the country.
The location where the film is shot is a former CIA base. So was the CIA also interested in what you did there and what you filmed? Did they approach you?
Not yet. Okay. and also Taliban didn't reach me yet. But eventually this will happen once the movie starts to become more outside the circle of festivals, which is happening around June, we're going to start to go in cinemas publicly with the film. So let's see then what will happen.
Okay. I also already briefly mentioned the scenes with the kids. So we saw the girls dancing around you, and we also see several scenes with little boys and their dads. And this, of course, reminds the regular visitors of Dogfest, maybe of the film Of Fathers and Sons by Talal Derki, who is the co-writer and producer, one of the producers of your film. How did this collaboration start happening? And did you discuss Of Fathers and Sons in relation to Hollywood Gate? And because those of you who haven't seen Of Fathers and Sons, it's a story about Syria and about the Islamic State. and the fathers and their children, and he's also sitting in a small compound for a long time and observing what's happening there. So there is a kind of parallel in the situation to that what you filmed in Hollywood Gate. So how did the collaboration happen, and did you discuss back and forth the two films?
I was the editor of Talal's last film, Under the Sky of Damascus, which I co-edited with Marion Tour, who's our editor as well. And the film was directed by Talal and Heba, Khalid, and Ali. And during the work that we were working on the other film, the situation in Afghanistan happened, and we were both very frustrated, and somehow something was happening to us. We were not able to work watching this footage of the airport and how crazy they were, especially those two people that hanged themselves on the tires of an airplane to try to just leave, and they fell from the airplane. It was very horrific for us. And we said, hey, I want to do something about Afghanistan. I think I'm able to do it. And he said, yeah, but what will you do? Make another movie like all the movies that comes, people who survive from the bad Talibans and come to the West who are like open and freedom and all of these, well, we know it's titles we use. So that's not going to be the right story. I said, but how about if I do a story about the Taliban? He said, yeah, in that case, we can try to find a way, but can you really get an access? So we started from the first, very first second. The idea came when we were working together, and we started to work on it from the very first second. And of course, his experience having lived through that has helped me a lot. And the most important thing that he told me, that he said, remember that when things gets really hard around you, to look inside your monitor and see what you're filming, because you know only your camera is capturing that. And this is a moment that's going to live forever. Your fear is going to go away, but this moment will live forever. Of course, later I knew that this is ADHD and I have hyper-focus like he does. And we focus on the camera because this is our hyper-focus and we get lost of the world that's around us. But this was very helpful, and he was very present in every day. It's a very collaborative work. This is not a job of one person. Or I was in Afghanistan with Adel, the translator, yes. But to have made this film, it was a collaboration of a team that is... people who I never even dreamt of meeting and sitting and having a masterclass with. And suddenly I find them sitting in the editor, in the edit, like our editor, Atanas Georgiev, who did the movie Honeyland, one of the masterpieces of documentary cinema. And he's sitting with me in the edit with our other editor, Marion Tour, and we're editing. I'm like, I'm editing with this man. These things doesn't come to my mind. Or working with Shane Boris and Odessa Ray, who did recently Navalny, and who did, Shane did Fire of Love and did Edge of Democracy. It's people who really come from a place that it was, making this film was for me a masterclass every day. Mm-hmm. And having done like the sound and the music and all of that done by the team of, that did All Quiet on the Western Front. Mm-hmm. So I was really learning a lot working on this. Yeah.
Your film actually is also kind of masterclass about becoming tech-savvy and media-savvy, and that's what the Taliban did over the last decades, I think. Your film starts with footage from the 1990s, where we see that the old Talibans, as I might call them, destroyed all images. They destroyed the Buddhas of Bamiyan. They prohibited films and music and all kinds of images and media entertainment, and now we see them kind of shooting a film themselves. There was a film within the film kind of scene. And over the year, when you observed them, I had the impression that they became more and more tech-savvy. Maybe some of you have also seen those scenes that were shot at the gym on TikTok or on other social media, because it has almost become a kind of meme, Taliban at the gym, the scenes that you show. So how did you observe this media savviness of the new Taliban?
The movie is called Hollywood Gate, which for me is a scandal, as Hollywood is the only place where evil is, where evil is purely evil and good is purely good. And this way of, American way of saying, hey, we are the good ones and the rest of the world is bad if they are not with us, and we are the right ones and the rest are bad and if they are not with us, is a strategy, the propaganda strategy that the Taliban has inherited from the Americans. They understood how to use it. And now they are trying to use that themselves. And the movie is warning the world that, hey, watch out, the Taliban did not only inherit the weapons, they also inherited the propaganda. And you have to understand that their propaganda will come to you in a way or another. So it's a warning about another tool of war that is now in the hand of these extreme militias. that are now becoming a totalitarian regime.
And by means of warning that you uttered in the film, I was wondering how serious is the threat against Tajikistan, because it's mentioned again and again in the film that they want to conquer Tajikistan or bomb Tajikistan or something. How's the situation between the Talib state and Tajikistan?
The situations are changing between Tajikistan or Iran, or every now and then there's like some clashes happening. But the whole idea about this is that the idea of wanting to invade another country is existent in the mind, in the hearts of these soldiers, and they are waiting for the confirmation from the leadership. Okay, now is the time to do it. They are not what they claim to be, that they just want Afghanistan. No, they want to expand and expand and expand. And those who are traumatized by war want to traumatize, they don't know peace, and they want to continue in this cycle of peace and violence. And unfortunately, we live in a world where warlords have a say in our lives in a much stronger way. And those leaders from the Taliban are no different than all the other warlords, regardless of their religion, background, ideology, name they give themselves, even if they call themselves Democrats, totalitarian regimes, whatever definition that defines those warlords. Warlords are warlords, and all what they seek is to achieve their own personal achievement. And we people that are being told we have to take sides, we're actually paying the price of what they are trying to achieve personally. And the hatred is just being spread among us every day.
Yeah, we see that with a little child who wants to kill them all. So it's just planted in the kids also. We covered quite a field already. Are there any questions or comments from the audience? Anything you would like to ask? So would you help us with the microphone?
Hello. Thank you for the film.
Thanks.
You said that it was easy to get in. How did you get out? And how did you handle the backups of your material?
The backups of the material? Okay. Unfortunately, the day of the parade, they came to me, the Secret Service came to me, and they said, we have to check all your footage, come to our office tomorrow. And this for me was the moment that I knew my mission here is finished. It's a military regime, it's no longer a militia. There is a Secret Service that's asking me to go to the office. So I left it the same day. And luckily, because I was filming also in the military, in the civilian airport, they knew me there. And one of the guys was helping me to leave quickly because he's trying to help the guy that knows the boss. So Taliban set me free and let me leave. And regarding the backups, I was always leaving a copy somewhere hidden in Afghanistan. And I only tell the translator about it every trip that I go. I spent around 7 months over the course of 1 year. And I left, I was coming back to Berlin to do trauma therapy and recover a bit, do some pre-editing, and then go back. And this last trip, I didn't leave any backup. So I actually didn't even copy anything. The whole footage of the parade was only on the memory card that is in my feet. Like, it was inside my shoes. Luckily, the card didn't go bad.
Weitere Fragen, Kommentare? Ein Moment, das Mikro ist auf dem Weg, ist gleich da.
Thank you. Could you tell us something about your kind of everyday life, if you had something like that? Where did you sleep? How did you get food? And would you say that you got closer to some of the Taliban during the whole year?
Thanks for the question. I spent most of the time with them. So if I'm filming and there's a chance to sleep inside the base, I will try to sleep inside the base because I want to film the morning, I want to film the evening, I want to film any time that's possible for me to film. Because the whole process of filming is to be present for so long, but not film. So they are relaxed about around me, and then I'm able to film. Also, they are mainly very generous people, and it's culture of Afghanistan. Afghans are very generous in general. So whenever someone has food, they will give you food. This is part of the culture, and Taliban are Afghans at the end. So they had this thing. And there were a lot of times where I would talk to someone and he would talk to me and then would start to show a lot of good traits in that person. And I was started to sympathize with some people of them. So when I was going back to therapy, I told her, hey, I feel like I'm being brainwashed here. She said, no, it's normal that you have some sympathy to some human being who's only showing you something good of them. But how about every time you face that, you ask an ideological question? So when I went back, every time I would feel a bit closer to someone, I would ask about how would he do if his wife decided to work? Something like that. And then the answers would be very clear. I'd be like, okay, bye-bye. We're not friends anymore. So always the ideological questions was the thing that would bring back the space. And also I wasn't talking much and I don't speak the language. So the language barrier was helping me a lot, actually. It was not something that was negative. In this case, it was very, very positive because I was, for them, the weird guy who was walking around with the camera.
Further comments? Yes. Here in the second row, third, fourth row, in the middle. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yes, please.
Well, first of all, thank you and your team for your hard work and dedication. So what I was wondering is, what was your hardest time? Because you already mentioned trauma and therapy. What was the hardest thing or time which you had to endure?
I would rather answer this by saying that my suffering in there is a choice. I decided to go there. I decided to do this journey. I decided to make the film. But the Afghans don't have this choice. My suffering was nothing compared to the daily suffering of the Afghans who are now living under the control of the Taliban, who lived through 42 years of war, invasion of the British colony, invasion of the Russians, and invasion from the NATO and the US. This country has not been rested for over 42 years of war, plus the time that of the Taliban, now almost 3 years. And the daily suffering of the Afghans is what's really important to talk about, and not my suffering, because my suffering was a choice, and I'm very privileged to have the ability to go to therapy. The Afghans don't have this ability, unfortunately.
All right, thank you.
Thanks.
And in the back, there's another question. Just a second.
First of all, a deep, deep respect for your courage, for your work. I was wondering how you managed it to record that clear production sounds. Were you allowed to attach, like Mansour, for example, with a little microphone, or did you record everything with your little shotgun microphone?
Yeah, if I say this from the shotgun, I'm a big liar. Of course, I had to put, I had six neck mics with me. And I was having the GoPro 2, the small ones, which is a mic in itself is a recorder. And I would attach it to them at the beginning of the day, not during the time when I'm filming. So when I meet them in the morning, hey, hello, I attach the mic. And then I wouldn't film for 2-3 hours, so they already forgot about the mic. And then the mic is there. And also I would place some in the room so it could capture the other people. So I had six mics that was always spread all over the room, plus the boom mic.
Wow, respect.
It's a lot of work for the sound. Frank Rosa, also, he did All Quiet on the Western Front. He did Citizen 4. He's a brilliant, brilliant, amazing sound designer that I brought him the sound that sounds like coming from everywhere. And then he said, okay, come after 1 week. And I came after 1 week. I was like, what is this? So I cannot take really the whole credit for the sound because I worked with brilliant sound designer and brilliant sound mixer, Anska Friedrich, who's one of the top ones here in Germany from Basis Berlin.
So props to your team. Thank you.
Thanks.
Any further questions? See, was that the hand? No, that, here in the middle. In the middle is? Yeah, thanks.
Thank you so much for that film. It was very impressive. For me, it was also, I think, the first time that I saw footage from Afghanistan after the takeover of the Taliban. So I think it's insanely brave what you did. So chapeau.
You said that you will show the film in cinemas and all of that. Do you think there will be, or like, what do you hope to get? What kind of reactions do you hope to get from it? Or like, I was personally very shocked to see what the Americans and probably every other country that was stationed in Afghanistan left behind. I mean, also the German base was not properly evacuated afterwards because everyone left in a hurry. So what do you hope to have a political, international reaction to your movie, maybe?
I hope that the world would understand that the forever war mentality is a failure and you cannot respond to a trauma that happened to you by conducting a war that kills a lot of civilians as collateral damage and hope that this will bring us will bring an end to terrorism, because terrorism, as we saw in the history of Afghanistan, was never ended and it's much stronger now. And all the weapons that were shipped to them to fight them are now in their hands. And the people that they were claimed to be protected by the Americans and the NATO are now under the Taliban, and even those who participated and helped the Americans and the NATO during their mission are now under the Taliban. And the world is forgetting about the Taliban. Nobody wants to talk about it anymore. So we hope to bring back Afghanistan to the front and remind that, yeah, we know the world is full of a lot of miseries, but one misery should not cancel the other one. And we should responsibly respond to all of the miseries that is caused by warlords. And hopefully we'll find solution. Maybe one day, I don't know, we could find peace. And it's really important to also understand that on the other side, Taliban understand what propaganda is, and they will try to use this tool. So the terrorism has not ended, but has become much stronger. So maybe we can find a different solution other than war. Maybe.
May I add a question there? Because the Western alliances left, but we see in the end, at the anniversary, the diplomats from Russia, from China, from Pakistan, from Iran. So there is a normalization going on with dealing with the Taliban as a kind of regular government. And I just read a headline the day before yesterday that the Afghani government, the Taliban, they are trying to develop the tourism sector now and trying to bring tourists to Afghanistan.
They have been trying for a very long to bring tourists. So and Afghanistan is a beautiful, beautiful country. And Taliban is another totalitarian regime like all of the other totalitarian regimes that are being left. So some countries are accepting them, some countries are not accepting them. But acting like they don't exist, which is the West is doing at the moment. In Germany, do you ever read any news about Afghanistan? No, it doesn't exist. Taliban don't exist. No, it exists. Mm-hmm. They do exist, they rule the country, and Afghans are suffering every day because of the actions of participation of the West in the country. So the solution has to come from the West, because the problem is caused at the moment strongly by the West. So we hope the West will find a solution rather than shutting an eye, acting like nothing has happened.
That's already strong last words, I would say. Are there any more questions? There's another one. Yes, please. In the first row. Yeah, great.
Yeah, I want to ask you about editing process, which kind of struggles you had, or if there are some plots that you decide, or it doesn't pass,
We had around 220 hours of material. Of course, we didn't film only with those two characters. We had other three characters that we were trying different ways to bring them in. One of them, if I'm going to give him a title, has the word liar here written. He would say something and then the next second does the opposite. It was brilliant character. We had to get him out because he was not serving this story. Because the moment we found the storyline, which is how did they find the weapons, what they tried to do, how do you plan to fix the weapons and what they plan to do with the weapons, the storyline became about the weapons. So whatever fits within this story, we had to bring in. Whatever doesn't fit, we had to kill our darlings. And this is a very normal process, because editing and documentary is not about what you try to put in, it's actually what you try to get out. Because you try to make it less and less and less until the story tells itself. And again, it was a collaboration of six people within one room. It rarely happens this way, but we were really six people sitting in one room the whole time, and we have to agree on something. This is how it worked until the last day. And it only worked when we all looked at each other and cried at the end of the screening. and hugged each other and felt our pain of war transformed into this movie. And this was the moment that we, regardless of our backgrounds, because we come from all backgrounds, we faced war from different directions, Americans, Canadians, Syrian, Egyptian, Macedonian, Swiss, we come from all different backgrounds, Mormon from Germany, totally different backgrounds, and we faced war in our own ways, but this represented the pain that we all faced. So this is when we decided, okay, this is the cut that works.
How long did this take, this process of editing?
A year.
Any more questions? Yeah, here in the middle again.
Just too curious about, did the Taliban ever reach out to you again, or have you been in any contact again after your leaving?
I had a dummy phone with me that I was always only using for the movie. And the moment the production ended, I had to cut connections because I need to move on. This was the end. And they knew from the beginning that I'm only here to do work. I'm not here to befriend you. I'm not here to be part of your life. I'm here only to make this movie. I want to stay in your life for 1 year, make a movie and leave. And also they understand propaganda. So they never asked me, hey, when you finish the last screening, come and show us the material. Because they told me, we know the moment you leave the country, we have no control over you. So they haven't spoken to me since then.
And there's one more question. Yeah.
Yeah. So are you kind of afraid of the Taliban, like seeing the footage and sometimes like getting a way of reaching out to you, like portraying them in a bad situation and their point of view?
I told them in the beginning, I'm going to show the world what I see without trying to make you look good or bad. I'll show what I saw and show the world what I saw. And that's what I did. They like it, they dislike it, it's up to them. Regarding fear, the moment you take such a risk, you know you're putting your life in risk. You're going to live for the rest of your life with that. And you have to find peace with that choice that you made. And I think I'm peaceful with the choice that I made. We are taking all the precautions needed. So if something might happen, we have a lot of support, hopefully, for nothing to happen to me. But I also live with peace with the idea that I took a risk and I have to live the rest of my life bearing that risk.
Well, it's very brave. Thank you.
Thanks.
On the issue of risk-taking, in the large thank you section, there are some familiar names like Christo Krossev, Daniel Roher, and some other people from the Navalny team. We will show in memoriam of Alexei Navalny, the film Navalny again, which was our opening film 2 years ago. How did the collaboration between Navalny and Hollywoodgate and you happen and come about?
I think we were very lucky to have met Odessa and Shane while they were touring the world with Navalny, and also Diane Baker, our executive producer, who the three of them became part of this film. And when they won the Oscar, that has financially helped us a lot to find the finances for this movie, because they've become the Oscar winners. And it was the same process. Anything related to security and safety, all of the safeties and security measures were done through the team of Navalny. Christo helped us a lot with things related to safety. Daniel had to watch a cut from the movie and give us his feedback. It's kind of a continuation, I believe. And if you make such risky films, you're very lucky if you are able to work with such thing. And the very important thing, whoever wants to make such a risky film, they have to make sure that it's very important that you have to do therapy, because you have to understand if you're really suicidal or you're just making a film. Is it all or none? What is what's in your head? And you need to really understand those answers and find the real why are you doing what you're doing. And all of that has to be done through therapy. And there's a lot of therapy funds for people who go to risky places. And surround yourself with a team that understands how to transform your material into something useful, because you could risk your life and then come with material that you make a very bad movie. So you have to be working with people who are really good from the industry that understands how can they make your material that you took your risk into something that is good. And be thankful for those who supported you and don't say I did it all by myself.
Thanks so much. Final round of questions. There's another one.
We can also be outside after here. There are and I have more questions if someone has more questions. I'm happy to answer all that.
Yeah, you took quite something on you. I mean, you lived 1 year with those people. Were there moments where you, I mean, where you start to feel closer to them? Even while they obviously do a lot of, you know, unspeakable things.
Yeah, I've already told her that when I felt a lot of closeness, not a lot of closeness, there was sometimes one guy I would ask, want to really hold him like this and say, what are you doing here? It's a group. It's a group like a hand. It's not a good one to say, but it's like a hand. Every finger is different. But unfortunately, these fingers, that one of them might be useful, one of them might not be useful. But each finger of these is on its own could have some good traits, but as a group, they are connected by the hand, and the hand has to do everything for them. And the whole ideology of the hand is not the right one. But individualism, you might find someone good, might find someone bad, but in general, they all have to follow and obey the rules. So it's not about the individuals anymore.
Hollywood Gate is only in the cinemas at DocFest. It's not on our digital screen. Are there any plans? Or is there a cinema date set already? Will you bring the film to the States for the next Oscar entry or something like that? What are the plans? What's the next steps for Hollywood Gate?
Well, this is the job of the producers. It's not mine. So I hope they do their best. But there will be some announcements hopefully soon, but we've been in around like 30 festivals. We've been in many places. We have a lot of festivals lined up for us now. And let's hope for the best. And what's important is that people really get to watch the film and talk about Afghanistan and not forget that this problem is existing today in our world, although there are much worse problems that we are facing, but we have to still remember that this is also there.
There are three more screenings of Hollywood Gate here at the DocFest. The next one is tomorrow at 6 o'clock p.m. At Atelier 1, and you will be there for the Q&A as well, and then there will be two more screenings. I would also draw your attention to Kamai, which is another film about Afghanistan, about the discrimination of Hazara people, which is also a screening on Friday at 6:30 here at HFF, Kino 2. And the aforementioned Navalny in Memoriam screening is on Friday, the 10th of May at 8:30 here in the auditorium of the HFF. Thanks for your interest. Thanks for coming and the many, many questions and the huge interest in your film. And most of all, thank you, Ibrahim Nashat, for the film and for being here with us in Munich.
Thank you for having me. Thanks.